This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
We hear desperate calls for immediate action, save Earth from climate change hell. But politicians waste time or even deny global warming? At what point would an overthrow of the political system be the best or only solution? When, as Roger Cox writes, is revolution justified? Who is this revolutionary? In the Netherlands, Roger Cox is a partner at the law firm Paulsen Advocaten. He is the powerhouse lawyer who sued the Dutch government demanding a 25% cut in greenhouse gas emissions by 2020. He won that case, setting a precedent for people around the world, and we will talk about that. He founded the Planet Prosperity Foundation, promoting a circular economy. And Roger is known in Europe as a leader in sustainable real estate development, something almost unknown in North America. Roger's new book is called Revolution Justified. Let's talk with him now. Roger Cox, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for inviting me and thanks for having me.
Is your starting point the conclusion that current governments are failing to avert a climate catastrophe?
Indeed, that is a starting point that we took as a starting point for our legal proceedings against the Dutch government. If you look at the evidence that is out there is a general consensus in the international community of countries, which has also been established once again in the Paris Agreement, that a 2-degree warming of the average temperature of the Earth would be dangerous for humanity and for the ecosystems that humanity depends on. And it's also widely recognized and acknowledged that current emission reduction targets of countries are definitely not enough for keeping us below this 2-degree threshold. So I don't think that there's any denial in the world that we're not doing enough to keep us below that dangerous threshold of 2 degrees. And we took that as a starting point for our court case.
Your book, Revolution Justified, talks about the failure of democracy. Do we need new leaders, or do we need a whole different form of government?
What I mean by that is that if you look at the current political system and our current economic system as well, it's very much short-term based, while solving the climate problem is really a long-term effort, where results will only be garnered at the second part of this century. And that has much to do with the delay in the climate system, in effect meaning that emissions that are discharged to the atmosphere today only have their real warming effect in 30 or 50 years later. So there is a delay there. And that makes it quite difficult for politics and also the market, I think, to deal with this long-term problem, given the fact that their focus is so short-term. Obviously, it's also an international and a very complex problem, so that makes it hard for politicians to deal with it in one-liners in the media, etc. So there's a lot of arguments that you can make why our current neoliberal policy system and market system is really not up to the task of dealing with dangerous climate change and really solving it. And then looking at our democratic system, it's a system based on the rule of law. And up till now, in the last 2 decades or so, climate change has only been dealt with by our political powers, the legislators and the executive powers, and really not so much by the third power in our democracy, namely the judiciary. So the idea is get the judiciary involved, and the only way to do that is to bring a case to court and ask him to intervene in climate policies, and that is what we did. So basically what I'm saying is I think that we need the judiciary as a third power in our constitutional state and in our democratic system to solve the climate problem and help the political powers, if you will, to solve that problem.
Please tell us more about your case, Roger Cox, against the Dutch government. What did you ask for and what did you get?
We asked for a certain reduction target by 2020, namely a 25% reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, cumulative emissions in the Netherlands by 2020. And that is a target that is derived from an acknowledgement by all industrialized nations of the world in 2010 in the so-called Cancun Agreements, where all industrialized nations like Canada and the U.S. And obviously also the Netherlands acknowledge that from a scientific perspective, it is necessary for them to at least reduce their emissions by 25% in 2020 relative to the levels of 1990. And actually, there's very few countries in the world that have followed up on that scientific finding. Those few countries being, amongst others, Germany and Denmark, who aim more than 25% by 2020. But the Netherlands is not, nor are countries like Canada and the US or Australia, for that matter. So what we basically argue in court and have done so with great success is that knowing what needs to be done to keep us below this threshold of 2 degrees and not doing it, so knowingly and willingly keep on contributing to emissions of greenhouse gases that will breach that threshold, is in fact a human rights infringement and is an infringement of the duty of care that a national state has against its citizens.
How has this groundbreaking legal victory in the Netherlands expanded into a movement in other countries?
Already when we started the case in the Netherlands, shortly after, a similar case has been brought to court in Belgium. So that's a case that's now pending for a year already. And it has the same basis and the same claims as we've in the Netherlands. I'm also involved in that particular case. There's a case now in New Zealand that is pending that is a follow-up on the success of the Netherlands. So they're pretty much using the same argumentation as we've put forward in our court case in the Netherlands and transformed it to the legal system in New Zealand. There's obviously a lot of litigation going on by our Children's Trust Foundation in the United States. That's a separate legal action that was instigated parallel to our start of the proceedings in the Netherlands. And there's a lot of interest in other countries, in Norway, Australia. There's a lot of interest in France. An organization has already claimed that they will sue the French government if they don't follow up on the same claim that we've been making in the Netherlands. There's interest in a country like Switzerland. There's interest in a country like Canada and Ireland. So there's definitely something going on. It's obviously a sort of fresh victory. The victory in court in the Netherlands was of June last year. So the fact that we now already have a few other cases pending in the world is very hopeful. And the same goes for the interest that there is in other countries as well.
Well, Roger Cox, let's say the Arctic sea ice disappears, the Northern Hemisphere is hit by years of unrelenting storms and heat waves, maybe crops fail. If a government fails to respond, do you think a violent overthrow would ever be justified?
I don't think that can be justified in our system, and I don't think that that is anything that we should aim for. The revolution that I am discussing is a revolution through the use of our legal system, which is obviously quite a different story. So I wouldn't argue that that is the way forward. But the other side of this question is that, in fact, there will be a lot of uprisings that will be caused by climate change and are already caused by climate change in a way, because it has already been established that the crisis in Syria, which has led to the refugee crisis in Europe, for instance, is partly due to climate consequences in Syria in the last couple of years. There have been extreme droughts between 2007 and 2011 in Syria, making it very hard for farmers to grow crops, and a lot of their livestock has died, and as a result thereof, 1.5 million farmers in that country have flocked to the city areas and have become impoverished in those cities. No jobs, and no way to get back to the countryside, to the rural areas where they came from. And obviously that is a sort of hotspot for unrest in any community and in any country. So there are links between uprisings and climate change, for that matter, and we will see more of that in decades to come. And I think that it's a serious enough development.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. We are talking with Roger Cox, a top-level lawyer working in the Netherlands. He says a revolution is justified, but a legal one. Now, you just mentioned really security, and I'm wondering how the problem of energy and climate change threaten public safety, even the stability that we have taken for granted.
Again, following up on what I was just discussing in relation to Syria, you see that there's a lot of security issues already in our country, in the Netherlands, but also in the European Union as a whole. in relation to the refugee crisis that we're now experiencing due to influx of refugees from Syria. And that leads to a lot of political discussions. Should we close our borders once again? As you know, the European Union, one of its main aims has been to become a sort of borderless continent where goods and people can move freely. And that is actually what we have established in the last decades. But now there's a lot of discussion again if each and every nation should start shutting down its borders once again and fall back on a scenario that we've been experiencing till a few decades ago, where there was no such a thing of free movement of goods and people and so on. So there's almost nothing that doesn't have political consequences already in relation to climate change effects. Look at the droughts that a state like California has been experiencing since the last couple of years. Also due to climate change, it affects their farmers over there. It affects the water system, the sanitation system. So there's a lot of consequences that we need to be prepared for that are related to changes in the climate.
Well, you know, I can believe some European laws could be used for a big change, but when we look at the top legal levels of the United States, it doesn't look so good. The Supreme Court has routinely quashed even the most rudimentary climate protection moves made by the Obama administration. How can we find hope there for a legal solution?
Yeah, well, I'm not an American lawyer, obviously, but what I understand from the cases that have been brought in the United States, well, obviously, one of those cases was extremely successful. That was the case of Massachusetts versus the Environmental Protection Agency, where the Supreme Court, in fact, stated that climate change is a real and potentially catastrophic phenomena for a state like Massachusetts and also, obviously, other states in the United States. So it's a real and imminent threat, climate change, according to the Supreme Court. And they've compelled the Environmental Protection Agency to indeed make a scientific finding about greenhouse gases as air pollution, which in the end the EPA also ruled upon in that way. So I think that the United States is one of the first countries where greenhouse gases have been designated as a air pollutant. And there's a lot of regulation that has been coming from that particular case and that particular finding by the EPA. That being said, other cases where companies have been sued by certain claimants, so fossil fuel companies, that is, those claims have been denied, and as I understand it, mainly on the fact that the Clean Air Act in the United States displaces the federal tort law, amongst others, if you will, and our case is mainly based on tort law. But it doesn't say anything on claims that can be made against states as such. That's one thing. And the Clean Air Act, for instance, doesn't displace the Constitution of the United States. So what you see now is that a foundation like the Our Children's Trust Foundation is litigating anew against the federal government, claiming more or less the same things that we've been claiming in the Netherlands, and arguing that climate change will become a violation of the constitutional rights of people in the United States, and particularly the younger generations and the next generations, as it comes to the right to freedom and liberty and so on. So there are ways forward on a federal level and also on a state level. And there's a lot of litigation going on against states, and almost every state, I think, by this foundation, by this group. So there's definitely hope that one way or another, also in the United States, one can find a direction through using the law in order to get states or the federal state as such compelled to do something and do a lot more about climate change. And the same sort of approach would, for instance, also be feasible in a country like Canada, where there is also charter rights that can be invoked as becoming infringed by climate change, etc. So you will have to look at each and every legal jurisdiction and legal system in each and every country, because you will definitely need some different angles in each and every country. But the basic reasoning that our case was based upon can be used in almost any jurisdiction, I would say.
Now, another possible roadblock I thought of was the international trade agreements, which take away national powers to protect the environment. The Trans-Pacific Partnership deal of 12 countries is just one example. It almost seems to me we are going backwards in law. What do you think?
Well, I think that the trade agreements could be and is maybe a dangerous development. On the other side, what one sees is that in those arbitrations where companies more or less sue governments because of change in environmental policies, a new development that one can also see happening is that that those same countries sort of counterclaim against those companies for polluting their countries. So I'm not sure where that will end up, but definitely this is something to be worried about, because in those trade agreements there is a sort of rule that gives companies, I guess, more power to sue a government than it does regular civilians or non-governmental organizations. So there's a bit of disbalance there, I think, when it comes to protecting your rights. It might be very well the case that businesses, due to these trade agreements, have come into a position where their rights might be better protected than the rights of civilians, regular citizens, and environmental organizations. But that is something that we will have to see. On the other hand, I would think that each and every company in the world right now must expect that countries will start to regulate the emission of greenhouse gases much stricter than they do right now. So I wouldn't be surprised that in the end of the day, those claims based on trade agreements will not be successful when it comes to stricter climate regulation by countries. I don't think that a company in due time can still argue that they needn't to expect that new and strict regulation would be implemented. And I think that especially after the Paris Agreement, everybody needs to expect that even companies and fossil fuel companies, that there will be much more stricter climate policies implemented in our countries.
Well, I do agree with you there, but what about countries where the rule of law is fuzzy at best? I'm thinking of China, which can make or revoke laws to suit political needs, or the many countries where laws are made to support oligarchs in power. We cannot sue to save the climate in Saudi Arabia, but we do need them on board. What then?
Yeah, well, my focus in this first phase is also not so much on countries like Saudi Arabia and China, and that is because on an international stage and in the UN Climate Treaty of 1992, and even in Paris and the Paris Agreement, it has been acknowledged that it is up to the industrialized nations first to make the big steps, and that has been the case for almost 20 years now. And that is based on a principle that is called common but differentiated responsibilities. So basically, in the industrialized world, I think that all legal systems that we have in the industrialized world are to be taken seriously and are not corrupt, I would think. And that is where our main focus is right now. So in the industrialized world, the first steps need to be made, and that's what our legal focus is on right now. In the second phase, one would have to look indeed also at countries like China and Saudi Arabia, for instance, and we would have to dig into their legal systems a lot deeper to get a good understanding of how to best go forward in those countries. But that is not something that I've studied already.
Roger Cox, I think laws should protect my descendants, but they don't. Can we change that?
I think that looking at the law as it stands now, and particularly looking at our case in the Netherlands, the court has already ruled that there is a responsibility for our state to keep an eye on the interest of the next generations of Dutch citizens. Because solving the climate issue, again, is something that is very urgent and it needs policy measures right now. And delaying those policy measures, which will make solving the climate problem only much more expensive and will have greater threats to our next generations. So in our case, our court found that you need, when drafting policies, climate policies, you need to take into account that you cannot shift too much of the burden of solving the issue to the next generations as a sort of equity principle. And this principle has also been enshrined in the UN Climate Treaty. And almost every country that I know of does have a principle that basically states that you should comply with international legal standards and principles as much as you can when looking at solving a national legal issue. So I do think that such an equity principle, for instance, between generations, is something that can be invoked and can be argued in court in almost any jurisdiction. So I do think that there are already ways in which we can address the position of the next generations.
And summing up, but two questions. First, what do you want lawyers and judges in every country to do?
Well, first of all, I think that it is very necessary that the legal community as such does get a better understanding of what the climate change problem is all about, why it is so urgent at this particular time. Although when you look outside, most of us will think, well, what's the problem? But that has a lot to do with not exactly understanding what climate science is telling us. I think that they needed to get a good grasp on the consequences that it will have for rights within their national territories. To give you an example, again in 2010 in the Cancun agreements, all nation states have acknowledged together that climate change will affect the enjoyment of human rights negatively in all areas in the world, no exceptions there. So it will have effects on human rights in Canada, in the US, in the Netherlands, in Australia, and not only in African or Asian countries. And obviously where there is a threat, a very large threat, a worldwide threat in essence, on large-scale human rights infringements, it is obvious that the legal community should get involved in an issue like that. So, and I always thought in our case that once we get the court to really understand what the gravity of climate change is and what the consequences will be in the next half of this century in the Netherlands and around the world, that once you really understand that, you will be open as a court for the suggestions that we've been making, is that it is absolutely unjustified and a violation of the law if you keep on willingly and knowingly contributing to creating that specific problem that will create these human rights infringements. So I do think that the legal community, lawyers, courts, academics, legal academics, do need to become much more involved in this issue, and hopefully there will be more court cases that will at least bring this question to court so courts can have an opinion about this issue. And that's also why we started the case. It's just to make it possible for courts to intervene if they think they should, and if they think they don't, they shouldn't, then that's also an outcome that one can live with. But I couldn't live with the fact that nobody was actually bringing a case to court, so the judiciary could have an opinion about it. And I think that is the most important thing for bringing cases to court, is to bring the judiciary in a position to become much more aware about this issue and have an opinion about whether or not the law has a role to play in solving the climate issue and in intervening in national climate policies.
We'll have to leave it there. We've been talking with an unlikely revolutionary. Roger Cox is a partner in a prestigious Dutch law firm, founder of the Planet Prosperity Foundation, and he leads in sustainable property development. His book is Revolution Justified, and you can find it at revolutionjustified.org. Get more links for this story in my own show blog at ecoshock.info. Roger Cox, it has been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.